Hello, and welcome to Well I Know Now, the podcast in which I talk to people affected by dementia in all sorts of different ways. I'm Pippa Kelly. My mum lived with vascular dementia for the last decade of her life. She's no longer with us. But one of the main things that mum's dementia taught me and my family was just how little we knew about it. Now, through my work as a dementia campaigner, I know so much more about this incurable condition. Not least, that the smallest things can make a huge difference to those with dementia and their families and carers. I called this podcast after a quote from author and poet Sylvia Plath, who wrote, "Well, I know now a little more about how a simple thing like a snowfall can mean to a person. Dementia teaches you this too." My guest today is an American who describes herself as a former just about everything, from non-profit arts administrator to cabaret performer to post-production professional to Crappiest Daughter of the Year award winner for more than 40 years. She forfeited that last accolade when, 6 years after her mum was diagnosed with vascular dementia and following the sudden death of her dad, she gave up her job with NBC in Los Angeles to move back to Oregon so that she and her sister could provide their mum with the best possible dementia care. Hardly the actions of a crappy daughter. To get her through this unplanned turn in her career, my guest started a blog called, brilliantly, Stumped Town Dementia. The blog brought her a temporary escape from dementia, as well as countless virtual caregiver friends from all over the world who supported her with their understanding comments, emails, and Zoom dates. They helped me, which in turn helped Mum. My gratitude to them knows no bounds, she says. She is Kitty Norton, aka blogger Lickety Glitz. It's a great nom de plume, and needless to say, it's linked to her spell in cabaret. To say Lickety's blog is a searingly honest account of her time spent caring for her mum is a bit like saying former President Trump is an average sort of bloke. It's witty and gritty, and I want to talk to Lickety, or Kitty, about Stumped Town Dementia's fiery yet often surprisingly tender language later. When her mum died in 2021, Kitty decided she wanted to meet the virtual friends who had become so very important to her as she cared for her mum, and in her words, sit out on a summer's night, open a couple of bottles of wine, and find healing in the camaraderie of a fellow dementia caregiver. Being Kitty, or possibly Lickety, she then went and did just that. And then she thought, well, hell, if I'm going all the way around the country to talk smack with seasoned dementia family caregivers, why not hire a film crew and make a documentary? It might help others on the same rough road. The result is an incredible 90-minute film charting the 7,500 miles and 27 states that Kitty covered in 26 days. Wine, Women, and Dementia has already been garlanded with awards. It's produced by some serious professionals and features caregivers Kitty encountered through her blog, including former Well I Know Now guest and host of Daughterhood, the podcast, the wonderful Roseanne Corcoran. Like Stumped Town Dementia, Wine, Women, and Dementia pulls no punches. Its protagonists, the caregivers, are strong, articulate women with fire and possibly the odd drop of rosé or Californian white in their belly. It's a rollicking, funny, sad, informative, supportive must-watch for all family caregivers and policymakers, for everyone remotely interested in dementia, in what it is to be a human under intolerable pressure for a very long time. Actually, perhaps it's just for everyone. So, Kitty Norton, aka Lickety Glitz, blogger, campaigner, filmmaker, and may I say, excellent daughter, a very warm welcome from all the way across the pond to Well I Know Now.
Thank you so much. Your intro almost makes me tear up. I sound so good when you say it.
A lot of people say that. A lot of my guests sort of say that. I think you don't often have that, you know, read out to you, but it is always true what I say. It's all true. And it's the early morning there, isn't it? Sorry, I caught you somewhat off guard. And it's early morning there because we're cruising into our evening here. We're in a different sort of mindset, I think, over here now. It's beginning to get a bit dark. We're winding down. But you're at the beginning of your day.
Yes, it's not that early, but I'm also a night person. So anything before 10 is usually pretty early to me.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll take account of that. Actually, my first question, though, really, just to set things up, was so that exactly I know, where are you now with Wine, Women and Dementia? I know you've got, I've seen actually, you've got several, lots of private, I don't know if they're private, actually, we've got screenings all over America, and you're launching in the UK, so that everybody over here knows, in May, to coincide with Dementia Awareness Week. But could you fill us in on exactly where you are now with this amazing film?
Yeah, most of last year was spent doing our festival run, and we started doing community screenings about mid-year last year. I think we had 10 festivals altogether, and we've had 29 community screenings in 2023. I think we've already booked up to 12 for this year already. And we've got, I'm going to start taking it worldwide. So we're going to do the UK rollout for, like you said, the Dementia Awareness Week in the UK, and going to be doing a multinational virtual caregiver summit, which I'm still trying to figure out the title of, but I'm thinking about calling it the Care Share Party, so that caregivers know it's about them, and it's about us being able to share our stories. And we'll probably have some professionals in there here and there, but it's more going to be conversations between us caregivers throughout the world. So I'm really excited about that and a little intimidated about trying to pull that off. Mm-hmm. But and then I think by the end of the year, it will be available for purchase, for streaming and purchase DVDs and all of that stuff. So things are moving ahead, whether I'm on top of them or not.
Yes, it is quite a juggernaut, isn't it? Or rather a sort of SUV. I mean, it's really good. I must say to people, it's very professionally done, and it's got a good soundtrack, really good soundtrack. And it's got, the cartoon aspects of it reminded me of Scooby-Doo, because they all went round in that white van, didn't they?
Yeah. Yes, we had some, a graphics team who were like, well, do you want to go with the more serious look, or do you want to have kind of a Scooby-Doo feel? And I'm like, I'm a kid of the 70s. Yeah. Scooby-Doo that
Scooby-Doo.
Shit.
Okay, so that was an intentional sort of nod to Scooby-Doo, was it? Because it is like Scooby-Doo, which is great. You sort of rollick around the country, don't you?
Yeah, I really wanted people to understand that this is not a dementia film that I've ever seen. This is not your typical dementia experience in film, and that there is a lot of laughter and there's a lot of love, and it's incredibly entertaining. Yeah. And it's also tragic, and you know, it's all the things that dementia is, and they're not all horrid and they're not all happy. It's a combination, and that's the film.
That's right. That's one of the things that you say, actually, that you're a bit fed up with it being constant sort of doom mongering, and actually along the way, you know, it can be quite funny, actually. And you need to grasp that, don't you? And the other thing that you've just again made that point is that I really love the way that you are absolutely doing this from the focus of the caregiver. You know, you don't make any apologies for that, but this is, you want to shine a spotlight on them, and you do so. And also, I thought it was very interesting when you said that at the screenings, you thought it was great that people sort of hug each other. And really, at the screenings, of course, a lot of caregivers come to them and they do exactly what you wanted in a way. They come together and you say, well, you can give me a hug, that's fine, but really just hug each other, and it's all about them.
Yeah, my point being is that I leave your town. You know, I show up for a screening and then I go home, but you've just sat in the theater for 90 minutes with someone who also finally saw themselves for the first time represented in this journey. And you already have something in common. You already are caregivers. You're already like watching yourselves on screen, even though you may not be the people up there. These are your stories. You get it. You know exactly what they're talking about because they know exactly what you're going through. You know,
absolutely.
So if you have that in common with the people you're sitting next to, you know, introduce yourself, say hello, say, hey, you want to have a glass of wine via Zoom or something, you know, a couple of nights from now, we'll talk about what we just saw and maybe we have more things in common, you know, things like that.
Absolutely.
So make those connections.
No, absolutely. You discovered, as I did actually, that you're not alone, and it's this great power in connecting with people who are going through or have gone through what you're going through. Somebody says on the film, you kind of think you're on your own, you're all in your little pockets, but actually there are thousands upon thousands of people going through it out there. And it's that connecting and how strong that can be, just knowing that if somebody else is going through it and then talking about it together. It's a really powerful, positive force, that, isn't it? It took me by surprise when I set up my blog.
It was the thing that saved me. And I don't think, I know the way that we got through dementia isn't going to be everybody's way to get through dementia.
Mm.
But for us, and for the people that connected to me, because that's how they were getting through it too, it was what saved us. It's what got us through. It's what helped us be more helpful to our care partners, our care, you know, our dementia people. That's what I wanted people to see. And you can see the film and say, you know, that's not really how I'm going to go through it. But I saw some things that these women were doing in their journey that, while that won't work for me and my care partner, it just maybe got an idea in my head of something that might, you know, it may have changed my perspective a little bit of, hey, you know, I can't hand my mom a banana phone. That would just piss her off. Mm. But, you know, I can do something similar. And I think that might work, you know, something.
Mm. I had to do a double take when you said that. When you say a banana phone, is that literally handing your mom a banana?
Yes.
Yes. For a while, I'm very, very literal. You need to know that about me. And I was thinking, banana phones? Are they a thing in Oregon? And then I did sort of think, maybe it's just a banana. Yeah. Okay. Which is a bit like a phone. Anyway, you're obviously incredibly creative. And so we're going to come right back up to your film. But I wanted to just sort of roll track back a bit to when you set up your blog, Stumped Town Dementia, which is a great title. And just explain to listeners how that came about. Because actually, I found that was a piece of general knowledge that I didn't know about Portland. So explain it. It's a great name.
Oh, yeah. So Portland is called Stumptown. And some of you may be familiar with, we have a very world-renowned coffee roaster, Stumptown Coffee. We're Stumptown because Portland was a big logging in Oregon. Mm. So when it was first created the town, there was a lot of stumps around.
Mm.
So that's how we got that nickname.
I didn't know that.
And then I was thinking about it. Yeah. I was thinking about the blog name and I thought, well, I'm always stumped.
Yeah.
You know, dementia is always stumping me.
Yeah.
I thought, well, what if I called it Stumped Town Dementia?
That's
because
brilliant.
I'm just stumped in Stump Town, you know? I have no idea what's happening now and I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So that's how the title came about.
Yeah. Was that about 2017?
Yes. My first blog post came out in 2018, so I think I wrote like two or three of them at the end of year of 2017.
Yeah, because it was very sad, wasn't it? Your dad vowed that he would care for your mum till she went, but actually he died very suddenly of pancreatic cancer. So you were then sort of like, right, what are we going to do? And you and your sister stepped up to the plate.
We were tossed into it, without any information. And both of us had clearly kept in touch with our parents, and I would, even though I was living in LA, I'd come home four or five times a year and spend, you know, a week with them trying to gauge where everybody was at. My sister lives on the Oregon coast, which is about 2 hours away, and she'd come home and take mom out so dad could have some time to himself and stuff. So we weren't, you know, completely clueless as to where mom was, but once dad died, it was like, okay.
Yeah. As it so often is.
This is really the situation.
Yeah. I mean, I think you did ask, actually, you said one of the things that you learned, one of your learnings, one of your, you know, things that you know now is that, well, in your typically sort of fruity language, you said you got still so pissed off because you just given no information and you know, kind of left high and dry. You wondered whether it was any better in the UK. And I've written a little note, you know, because sadly, no. I'm so often, my mum died a long time ago now, but I'm so often told by current carers that, you know, or the people with dementia who are living with dementia themselves, that when they're given the diagnosis, it varies quite a bit now. And it has got better in some areas. But the number of times I've been told that the diagnosis is given, well, it's good news and bad news. The good news is you haven't got a brain tumour. The bad news is you've got dementia and sort of go away and sort out your affairs kind of thing.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's definitely better. Mom, I was with mom when she was diagnosed with MCI. She didn't want anybody else to know that she was going to the doctor for this. So it was just me and her. And it was literally, here's some brochures. This will lead to dementia. We don't know what kind yet. Come back and see us in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's nothing. There's no information. There's no, hey, you're going to have a rough road ahead, but you know what? You still got life.
Yes.
You got a lot of life.
Yes.
This is a long illness.
Yes.
Cowgirl up, man, because you're going to have some fun in it and, you know, and then die.
Yeah. So, yeah. But we're all going to die, aren't we, eventually?
There's nothing. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, to give people a flavor of you and how witty and punchy your language is, I asked you beforehand if you would mind just reading a short passage from your blog, because people always say I was honest when I used to talk about and write about my mum's dementia, but I think you go even further, really. You're very self-critical and you don't mind sort of talking about your own shortcomings. So to set the passage up, it's in 2021, and actually you did it's short, very shortly before your mum died, isn't it? And,
it was.
And you write that you're hungover and you're disgusted with yourself. And it's only the departure of your mum's carer at midday that rouses you from your bed. You know, that you're very, very honest. Luckily, your mum's shower has gone well that day. She's clean and dressed. And then you take it up from there, Kitty.
Certainly, yeah. So this is what I had written at the time. I turn from her to make the bed, then suddenly crumple onto it. I fight a shudder I cannot contain as it overtakes me. Unbidden tears cascade down my cheeks as my face contorts to embrace the sobs I am trying to quell. I look up as she stands over me. I don't know what I'm doing, Mom. I know my eyes are pleading for motherly empathy for my plight or a motherly scolding for my self-indulgence. I could count on either reaction a decade ago. I see her eyes cloud with sorrow, desperately searching for a maternal response. It's as if I'm watching a movie, old mom pushing through the crushingly dense fog of her brain, seeking her motherly instincts, fighting for purchase to break free and employ them. It is there on the tip of her brain. She knows she used to know what to do, but now hopelessly grasps the thin air. This crying person needs her, a person she suspects she loves, but she cannot comprehend what action, what words will comfort. I understand in an instant I have plunged her into misery. I look down to pull myself together and look back up at her with an expression I hope is a smile, but instead feels like an upturned grimace of pain. No matter. Now Mom has come to her rescue, relieving old Mom of the burden of memories she can no longer access, of emotions she can no longer express, of situations she can no longer react to. I've never been so grateful to see now Mom in my life. Now Mom's eyes are free of trouble. My sorrows cease to drain her. Instead, come on, she says, and takes my hand.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really powerful writing. It just stands alone, doesn't it? Because it brings out so many elements of dementia there. I mean, this old mum and then the now mum, and how in a way I remember that so well. In fact, I did write a short story around that, that when you get the old mum, you get flashes of the old mum earlier in the dementia than you're talking about there. But when it really does come back, that can be very, very moving and quite difficult for the daughter or the relative, which is what really is so often talked about now, that actually you need the now mum. You need to go with the person now and what they are now. And you bring all that out so well through that little sort of incident that's everything and nothing and is repeated time after time.
Well, thank you. And when I read that back to you, because it's been a while since I'd read that post, it struck me again as how sometimes dementia could really protect Mom.
Yeah.
You know, it was destroying her, but in other times too, it was like, wow, I'm really screwing up here. But you know what? Dementia is going to protect her from that. Dementia is going to give it 5 minutes and Mom won't realize how much I screwed up. You know, Mom will be in her safe dementia place again, where it doesn't matter. All she needs is a cup of hot cocoa and, you know, a ride in her van and she's fine. Whereas I'm still later that night going, oh my God, how awful am I?
Well, exactly. Because because you are so honest, you have got all the complexities, all the knotty emotional complexities of the relationship that you have with somebody with dementia, and the goods and the bads, and the fact that they can't remember, which is at once their curse and yet their blessing, and you know how difficult that is. I know people with dementia have said that to me. I feel it's worse for my family because they kind of stand and watch it all, and I'm sort of inside it. People with dementia have said that to me, so I, you know, you have to be very careful because I mean, God, you know, it's a terrible thing. But yeah, it's very interesting. Anyway, I thought that was a very, 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 very good passage. And as so often with very good stories, what you've done there is you've taken a very personal little vignette almost, but it's very, very personal. It's unique to you, but it's also a universal story. And that's why it connects with all of us who've been there.
Well, and I think, you know, for me, I came from a family where, you know, we were all very self-deprecating in our humor. Mm. Like the humor you see in the film is the humor my parents gifted me with. You know, that's why it worked for our journey. But also when I would write these things, it's because I would need to process them.
Yes.
I would need to finally write the paragraph that I realize mom's dementia came to the rescue that day.
Mm.
You know, it allowed her to eventually go, I can't help this person and I'm so frustrated about it, and then just forget that part.
Mm.
And then just be in the moment.
Mm.
There's not a lot dementia gives anybody. And what I found is that I needed to really look at the moments where it came to the rescue for mom,
mm, mm.
or where it gave her something that she didn't have before,
mm.
to help me get through it. Like my mom was rather timid out there in public. You know, her whole life, she was a beautiful woman. I remember
she was beautiful, yeah.
She would get attention that she did not want and be very kind of concerned about it, even with her little girls in the car, you know, and
mm.
and that all fell to the wayside with dementia. I mean, when COVID hit, we could have still taken mom out, put a mask on her, got her out and around because she was very mobile, but we couldn't keep her hands off of anybody in the grocery store. You know, she was always running up to strange men to like touch them on the arm or, you know, hug a little baby in a cart. And she just like lost all these inhibitions. And I thought, well, it doesn't give her much, but
yeah,
good on you, dementia, for letting Gloria Norton just be absolutely the purest form of Gloria Norton she could possibly be in this moment.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, how sort of wonderful in a weird sort of way. Yeah, absolutely. And again, I've heard that before, that sometimes people that were quite sort of buttoned up, suddenly they become much more open and free with their emotions, which can be a good thing. Yeah. And what was interesting as well, so you set up your blog and then you said, as I said in the intro, that these people that connected with you, you set up your blog for various reasons, to get you through it. It gave you a means to share with other family members, and it's a creative outlet, and it saw you through it. And as you say, you were able to process your own emotions through it. But then you just contacted, and I think, you know, you concentrate on five other caregivers in the film, but there were lots more, weren't there? And they just really saw you through it. And of course, that went on to lead to the film Why Women Dementia. But just explain how that happened, actually, how through the blog you began to get this amazing network of virtual friends, and then why that then led you. And it's quite interesting, actually, after your mum died, because it took a little bit of thinking about, didn't it? First of all, you thought you'd just drive off, you know, into the distance and go and enjoy stuff. And then you thought, no, what I really want to do is go and meet these people. So just talk us through all that process.
Absolutely. I can't do anything simple. I have to pile on as much crap on myself as I possibly can to make something stressful and
well, it's
take
our
all
game,
the fun out of it.
It's our game.
actually, it was amazing. Yeah, so my sister and I spent 5 years caring for mom, and because mom had a split level and, you know, I was living down in California with my boyfriend, the easiest thing for us to do after dad died was just to move right into the basement of her house. Cause it was a split level, you know, when it was your mom days, I would be the one upstairs sleeping up in mom and dad's room. Mom had her own little bed elsewhere. And, you know, you could pretty much live all upstairs and somebody could be downstairs kind of having some time to themselves.
Right.
So that's how it worked out for us. But I was here 24/7, even when my sister was here, even when we hired a third person the last 2 years of mom's life was here. I was still the one who, you know, if I heard weird things going on upstairs, I went up to make sure everybody was okay. It's a lot.
It is. It's the unrelenting sort of nature of it.
Yes. Yeah. Unrelenting. That's a very good descriptive word of it. Mm. And one thing I thought about even before Mom died was, when this is over, I just want freedom.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm going to have to do the estate sale. I know, you know, I'm the person in charge of making sure everything goes through legally. But I just want to walk away.
Yeah.
No, I want to drive away.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I want to drive away really, really far.
No, I completely understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And these people who had been reading the blog, and we were never, you know, huge. I think at the most we had like 350 subscribers, and some of the posts get up to about 2,000 readers. But, you know, they all meant so much to me.
Yeah.
They would send me comments or comment on the blog or, you know, emails. And five of them became really important to me. And, you know, you talk about Roseanne Corcoran. I don't think she was doing her podcast when we first connected. I think she just read one of my blog posts and was like, okay, I need to know this person. Same with Allison Schreier, who now runs Zinnia TV for dementia people. She didn't have any of this going on. She just was like, oh my God, this woman is telling me the absolute truth and I need to get to know her. Veronica in Dallas, for some reason, it was our sense of humor. She had kind of the same sense of humor as my family. So she would send me emails just out of nowhere about things that were burning down at her place, but they would be really funny. And they would show up on the day that I really needed something funny because things were burning down in our house too. And I couldn't find the funny that day, you know? So yeah. So after Mom died, I thought, I want to go meet these people in person. We've been navigating this virtual relationship, this virtual friendship. And now I just want to go tell them, thank you, how much this meant to me and how much you helped me and Mom. And that's when I started to think, well, if I'm going to do that, if I'm going to achieve my need for freedom and my need to tell these people thank you and meet them in person, then maybe this would be really helpful for other caregivers. And it just kind of snowballed from there. I decided, well, I don't just want to drive my car. I want to buy a used RV.
I know, you do. Yeah, you do push it. Yeah. And who and where did you get all your professional filmmakers from? Because it's quite a list at the end of the film. I mean, these people are, you know, tell me about how you found them.
Well, I had a friend who worked in commercials up here in Portland. So he found the sound person and the director of photography for me from locals. When it came to doing post-production, I had come up from LA with a lot of post-production experience. So, you know, I had worked in narrative, which is very different from documentary. Those don't really overlap. So I knew my contacts probably weren't going to be interested, but I knew how to find documentary editors. Greg Byers, who is our editor and co-producer, absolutely fell in our lap. He's an Emmy Award winner, as is Taki Oldham. But Greg told me that he just likes to accept small little gigs in between his big ones that he gets paid really good for so that he can learn more about the world that he exactly
How lucky was that?
I know. I know. And I kept saying, you did see what I'm paying per week, right?
Well, I was going to say, because when I saw, you know, how illustrious they were, I thought, how did she fund these people? So, okay, they obviously took, you know, not pro bono, but they did it for vastly reduced rates.
Right. Mom and Dad had done very well for themselves.
Right.
Like their daughters, you know, started out in middle class and worked our way down. But Mom and Dad started out in poverty and worked their way up. So they were upper middle class. By the time all was said and done, there was still some money left for my sister, myself, and my two nephews. I took mine and blew it on this documentary. And my sister took hers and bought a house in Portugal. So,
yeah.
At least she has a place to live when she runs out of money. I'm going to be on the street talking DVDs.
You have a lasting sort of tribute to your mum, though, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Did any of the professionals who worked on the film, did any of them have any connection to dementia through any loved ones of their own?
No, family caregiving, yes. Taki had done some caregiving for his older parents, I think a stepdad and his mom, and Beth, who went with me, she didn't have any particular relatives that she had who had dementia, but she had a friend that she would go over and sit with her dad when that friend needed to go.
Yes, it was nice you had your friend.
Doctor's appointments and stuff.
Who didn't, sorry, I didn't mention her because she doesn't sort of appear too much in the film, does she? But she's obviously there with you, and it's a great for you to have her sort of sitting beside you as you roll along these thousands of miles. Yeah.
She was a screenwriter. So when I knew I wanted somebody to go with me, you know, screenwriters never have real gigs. So I was like, who could take 26 days off? I'm like, that's good.
Yeah, you make a good team because she doesn't take anything too seriously either by the sound of it. Yeah. And then these caregivers are very mixed. I mean, that's another of your learnings, actually, is that you can be a caregiver in so many different ways. I think that's Grace, isn't it, in Illinois? She's a long-distance caregiver. And then Alison, who I thought was, I think they're all brilliant in their own way. But I remember Alison because I thought it's very difficult when it's your parents, of course, isn't it? It's very difficult on steroids when it's your husband, your spouse, your lover. That's a different kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I really felt for Alison because she's looking after her husband and that's hard. But it's so great because over your sort of glasses of wine in the evening when you were talking to her, it's a really good conversation, that one, I think, because actually underneath all the laughter, it's just really awful, isn't it? Because she was very keen to clear his name because he just changed because he had frontal temporal dementia, didn't he? So his personality changed.
Yes, yeah.
And people thought, and as she said, yeah, great, he's not an asshole. You know, and she was able to sort of clear his name through the documentary by putting it out there. Yeah, he had this terrible disease, you know. And it was very moving, that, actually, I thought. You know, she was his lover and then she has to care for him. And you see all that, you know, it's very good filming where she's kind of getting him in and out of the car. And he was young, wasn't he?
Yes. In fact, he wasn't diagnosed until he was 47. But for 6 years, they'd been trying to find a diagnosis. So that was, you know, at 41, they
really
finally
young.
Went, hey, something's not right here.
Yeah.
So I came away from each evening saying to myself, we could make a whole film just on this person alone and their experience.
Yes.
But to be able to combine them all, to have that diversity in the types of dementia, in the, you know, the types of caregivers. I mean, I even have my friend Nicolette, who's been my friend for about 25 years now. You know, she talks about how she had done for her grandmother, had cared for her grandmother when her mom was diagnosed. She couldn't. You know, we even have a dementia caregiver who's like, I can't do this again. And she didn't. She left it to her brother to do this time around. She's like, I'm done. I'm drained. I can't. And so I wanted to make sure we had a really good spectrum so that people could see themselves. I wish we would have been more racially diverse, and I wish we would have been more financially diverse. But I also knew that because it started with, I'm going to go see these five people, bringing other people in just to get those boxes ticked felt disingenuous to what this film was about.
No, I think you're right.
And I thought, you know, in my next thing, I can show more of the spectrum of the family's experiences and where they're coming from. But yeah, I just love that we're all different ages. You know, some of us are older. I think Grace is our youngest. She was mid-30s.
Well, let's have a quick listen to them now then, because we're going to have a short clip from the film. And in it, in this clip, we hear Roseanne, I believe, is at the beginning. The third one, actually, is Alison, the one we've just been talking about. And you'll hear her talking about clearing Matt, her husband's good name. So let's just listen to the clip now.
We got stuck with a disease that hardly has any information about it.
Everything is so vague, and it's like, you could try this, you could try that.
I was looking for somebody to help, and there just wasn't anybody.
I started the Stumptown Dementia blog for a lot of different reasons.
What Lickety has done with her blog is she has said, let's talk about what's really going on and let's have family care partners see that I'm not the only one.
It also opened up a whole new world of other dementia caregivers who became my touchstones, my lifelines.
For about the last year of Mom's life, I was like, oh, Wouldn't it be so much fun to just like get a house on wheels and roll around the country and meet these people?
Cheers!
Cheers!
Cheers! There's so much more to dementia than they tell you in the movies.
We're gonna have to see how it goes for my dad. Right now, I think he is crying out for a break.
I didn't know if she knew it was me or if she was just mad at the person that was coming in, but she was pissed off. And I was like, oh. And I never knew what to do with that because it was so not her character.
He doesn't speak much these days. And once in a while, you'll get the, hey, sweetie. You know, and you're like, oh my gosh, Dad, you know.
The people who he was working with had lost all respect for him. And it was really important to me to kind of clear his good name, to let everybody know.
Good news, it's dementia.
Yeah, right? I know. He's not an asshole.
The last thing you said to us was, I'm going to bed. You didn't say, I'm going to go out for a 2.5 hour walk.
I didn't intend it to be 2.5 hours. I got lost.
We're all in our own houses and our own little worlds caring for our people, and we think we're the only ones that are doing it when there's people all over the country doing it. We just don't know them.
Maybe this movie will be seen by enough caregivers so that we push a generation of caregivers a little further down the road, and then they in turn can figure out the way that they're gonna let the next generation of caregivers get a little bit of a head start, and maybe we can all stop being so
line.
Yeah.
You know, there you got a real flavor of these different voices, different women. And actually, in the middle there was Lindsay. And that point really sort of hit me quite hard because when she's describing how her dad will sort of come back to be the old dad. And so every now and then he'll just say, hello, sweetie. And that really gets to her because, and I remember that so well with my mum, you know, when she'd come back to the old mum, and that she'd have a sort of little bit of lucidity about her. And actually, in some ways, that was harder because you think how very frightening it must be for the person when they keep sort of drifting in and out of it like that. And then yeah. I think finally, I don't know who says this, but yeah, you know, the way that everybody thinks they're sort of all in their own little houses, all on their own and caring for their people.
That's Suzanne.
Yeah, but they're not the only ones doing it, you know.
Yeah, there's 16 million of us in the U.S. alone. Okay, now think of how many people are there in the world, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I have never been able to find a definitive estimate from the World Health Organization or anything like that.
No, we won't, because in various countries they won't even...
informal.
They won't track the numbers, will they? No, so...
Right.
Well, it's just a hell of a lot, isn't it?
And if we could bring it together, think about our power, you know, like the baby boomers have been running everything for so long because they were such a huge worldwide population. Well, do we beat them out? And if we do, if we even come close, then what does that make our power to say, hey, we're going to change the world in this respect. There's enough of us to make a difference here. If you politicians don't snap to two, we're going to get rid of y'all.
Or it's a movement, isn't it? Because I often, I mean, I did write about this at one, because it reminds me quite a bit, because there is more of a voice now, because of this coming together of all these people, there is certainly over here in the UK, there is more of a sort of lobbying voice now. I think it's getting stronger. And the voices of people with dementia and their families are becoming heard a bit better. And it reminds me very much of the disability rights movement, you know, or a good sort of 20 years ago now. And a lot of the phrases used are the same, actually, because the disability rights lobby used to say nothing about us without us, which is one of the slogans here.
Right.
Why now in our legislation we tend to more, not always, but, you know, get the input of people living with dementia and their families before policy is made. And, you know, it's moving towards a bit. It is very, very slow. And, of course, the whole social care system over here is a whole other story, as I'm sure it is in the US. You just mentioned there, rather tantalizingly, oh, well, I'll do that in my next thing, you know, get a more diverse.
Yeah.
So what is your next thing then?
Well, I'm really interested to see if I can prove to people that there's an audience for dementia stories
right.
Throughout this next year, because what I would really like to do is take the blog and turn it into like a half hour dramedy.
Okay.
Because like you were saying earlier, which I, it completely pinged in my brain. You said, you know, this is like a little vignette. This is like, it's a story. And that's how I see almost all of those blog posts. Some of them were much more informative, but a lot of them were just, I could see this as a half hour episode, you know, of the time we found reading glasses in mom's butt cheeks and we don't know how they got there or whose reading glasses they are.
Wow. You know? Okay.
I know, right? You know, about things like the with the passage that I read of just the devastation in these small moments, and you have to keep going. But that requires investors. So if I can prove that there's an audience for this, for caregivers and dementia stories, then I would like to, after this, maybe definitely this year and probably some of next year will be, still be spent on this film, getting it out there. But I'd love to be able to sit and write a pilot and get some help with maybe putting a series together and then see what I could do to put something out.
Well, good luck. Good luck with that. I mean, if anybody can do it, I should think you can.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I wonder what
nobody ever tells me I can't, so I just keep going.
You just keep going. Yeah. Well, I love it. I mean, I was going to sort of ask you about your, so the lickety glitz came from when you were in cabaret, and you did tell me beforehand that you had this fantastic name. You were known as Catastrophe Prone. When you did cabaret. So I think, you know, it would be brilliant if you could go off and do some more catastrophe stories or something. Catastrophe dementia stories. It would just be brilliant. Because it's good to find some humour in it. And the passage that we read was very moving. And I think it went to, well, it spoke to the identity crisis that you must feel with it being your mum, but not quite your mum, but it is still your mum, and who is it, and what they're going through. And, you know, there are these very
And it's both of us. It's
exactly.
Both of us feeling the identity crisis
absolutely.
Moment. I don't know what I'm doing.
Absolutely.
And mom doesn't know what she's doing.
Absolutely.
And we still have to
get through
to where
it.
We need to be to continue with the day.
You said that very, very well. It's the mother-daughter role, isn't it? And it's all being sort of shattered by this disease. And in the end, ultimately, actually, she did say, come on. And in a way, she became your mum again. You know, it's all very poignant.
She was very bossy towards the end. My mom had vascular dementia, too. I don't know. Did your mom go nonverbal pretty early? So did mine. But she did.
She was nonverbal for the last 3 years.
On.
And she was very bossy as a woman. Yeah.
And I was like, come on, come on. That's like the only phrase she had for the last year of her life. That and thank you. She'd say it like Marilyn Monroe when you'd hand her
really?
A strawberry milkshake or a hot chocolate.
Oh, right.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. No, my mum didn't have that. She probably had a bit of the come on. We used to laugh because my dad's phrase for anything was yes, dear. You know, after 62 years of marriage, Dad would just say whatever he was, you know, you could have said to him, you know, can I have sort of diamonds from Tiffany's? And he'd just say, yes, dear. You know, it was just a sort of standard answer. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Kitty. That was lovely talking to you. And I would urge everybody to see it when it comes to the UK. How's the best way for them to try and see it from May in the UK?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited for the UK. It's, you guys both call it the Dementia Awareness Week and Dementia Action Week.
Yes.
So we are going to roll out the film for you guys. And what it will be is a week of free screening, virtual. You can have a Be Our Guest ticket that you register for that, you know, if that's what you want to do, you can watch the film absolutely for free. But if you can't afford to support the film and support us getting to more caregivers around the world, then you can purchase a ticket for like £10 or £20 or something.
Right.
And that will go to helping me, you know, continue to get this out. But yeah, it's just going to be for you guys to see. We're working on putting a virtual meet and greet together after that week. So we can talk about, you know, anybody who wants to can join that. And we can talk about, you know, what did you take from the film? Is there ways that you have been able to build your community? Is there ways that the film helped? Or do you see differences in your journey that you would have liked to have seen in the film? Like, we're just going to talk.
Yes,
we're just
going to
be caregivers talking. Yeah. It starts on the 13th.
13th of May. Okay, well done.
Yeah, it'll be May 13th through the 19th. So it'll be a full week, Monday through Sunday, yeah. I finally contacted Alzheimer's Society because I couldn't figure out what the right dates were. And yes. They came back with that.
Good. Okay. Okay. And they came back. So that's definitely okay. Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for talking to me. And once again, I would urge everybody to watch the film. You will cry, I think. You need a hanky, but you will also laugh a lot. And it's a rollicking, moving, fast-paced, but then sometimes thoughtful and reflective journey around dementia, really, isn't it? It's got it all there.
Gosh, Pippa, this has been so fantastic, and I look forward to just getting it to the rest of your country and seeing what you guys think and meeting caregivers elsewhere in the world. This is really exciting for me. So I appreciate you having me.
Oh, pleasure. I love talking to each and every one of my Well I Know Now guests because they bring different gifts to the party. Kitty, Lickety, is a breath of fresh Oregon air, so straight talking, wonderfully witty and self-deprecating and very creative, a power force of energy in the global dementia movement. I was drawn to her by her film, of course. I really cannot recommend it highly enough. Through wine-fueled conversations, laughter and tears, we see the hard reality of caring for loved ones with dementia. The grueling times punctuated with moments of joy and humour. I was also drawn to her through the powerful words of her blog as her mum's carer. As you may have noticed, I'm a sucker for a good writer, and Kitty is certainly that. She writes as she speaks, something which looks so easy, but is actually extremely hard to pull off and is always compelling. Genuine, unflinching, her tales of her mum's dementia are at once intimate and personal, yet universal. Her messages are my messages. You are not alone. There is life, albeit a different life, after a dementia diagnosis. The seemingly small things can transform someone's day. There is huge, unexpected power and comfort to be had in connecting with others going through the same experiences. Don't be afraid to reach out. And what an amazing job the thousands upon thousands of unpaid, unprepared, untrained family carers do, day in, day out, week after week, year after difficult year. You can find all the up-to-date information on when Kitty's film will be available here in the UK and elsewhere throughout the world, and some wonderful clips at the website www.winewomenanddementia.com. And you can find her blog at www.stumptowndementia.com. And finally, if you've enjoyed listening today, I would be very, very grateful if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform or channel you're listening to it on, as this will help spread the word about the podcast, and then together perhaps we can further diminish the stigma, increase the knowledge, and quash the myths surrounding dementia.